Hello, welcome to We Cut Heads, a Spike Lee podcast. I'm your host, Spencer, and with me is a, he's a refined man. He's not a criminal. He's an addict. You get that, Joel? You're not a criminal.
Not what? I don't know what you're talking about.
Movie.
What? What? I don't know what you're talking about that, but... He says he's not a criminal,
yes.
He's an addict? Is it like a metaphor? Is this entire movie like a metaphor?
It's a lot of things.
You're blowing my mind. Hi, I'm Joel.
Yeah. So this is the second half of the Godger and Hess pairing. This is a Godger and Hess episode. Godger and Hess is one of my favorite movies, and so I wanted to use an excuse to talk about it somewhere, and so this is kind of a perfect... excuse, and with us today is special guest Melanie. Do you want to go by first name?
Melanie Daniels.
Okay. So how did you first hear about Godger and Hess?
Honestly, it was years ago. I don't know. I was trying to think. It's definitely something that my older brother showed me, but I really don't remember the first time watching it, which is odd because it's one of my favorite movies as well. I love this movie. But, it was probably... When did the DVD come out?
I think maybe 5 or 6 years ago. I'm not really sure.
I'm looking.
There's
right
a review
now.
On Slant of the Blu-ray.
Yeah, which I have the Kino Blu-ray.
Yeah,
that's newer. I can't remember the first time that I saw it, but I think my initial impression was just it wasn't even. Obviously it's a vampire movie. It's a movie about many things, but. Just the style of it. It's a very, very sexy movie, and I think that's what I was just blown away is the style of it and how pretty and dreamlike it is, you know?
Yeah, I think I first heard about it when I first got into, more artsy movies, maybe 5 or 6 years ago. I don't even remember how, but, I think I was just looking up, vampire movies, and I saw a name, and a name just stuck with me for years. And then I remember, Joel, you suggested I check this out and maybe we should cover it on your show. Around the time I did the Knock at Eye episode.
It's funny that I would tell you to check it out because I hadn't watched it myself. I just, when it comes to vampire movies, this is one that usually comes up because it's so unusual compared to the typical vampire fare. So I was like... let's get some perspective in here, you know.
Yeah.
Let's see, the only person I know that is not white is Spencer. Okay, hey, Spencer, what are you doing?
You're kind of the reason I watched it, because you planted the idea in my head, and I watched it on Fandor, which I guess was going to go away, but hasn't gone away, because they found backers again.
Yeah.
But
yes,
the... But I'm... I'm not as wealthy as I used to be, so I kind of had to cut ties with that, so I got the Blu-ray. But I have seen Godger and Hess, at this point, maybe six or seven. And, it's to the point where, I don't feel bad if I fall asleep because it's so dreamy. It just kind of, lulls you into, this a weird state.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say you're not a criminal but an addict?
Yes.
So yeah, I can play this game too.
My original idea was going to do a hip hop line, but it wouldn't go over all because you don't like hip hop very much.
That's not true. I listened to Another Bad Creation.
Okay. Well, I was going to do a...
Bell Biff DeVoe?
I'm not going to give you a shovel. No, there's going to be a Flatbush Zombies line, Michi Darko. I'm addicted to love, lust, knowledge, and euphoria. Drug C
and D, cubs, ganja, and agoria. Blood, guts, and... Yeah, I would have just gone over my head.
I feel like if Marcus hears this, he might know what I'm referring to. It's in a remix of an Il Bill song. You like Il Bill, Joel? The older brother of Necro?
Il Bill? I prefer Volume 2.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Howie Made Me Do It, Volume 2, his mixtape.
Mm-hmm. That's the one.
The one where Michael Madsen is like, I was going to shoot you in your boob.
Okay, I think we're talking about different things right now.
Oh.
Anyway, enough about hip-hop. So, Joel, how did you first hear about this movie?
Ooh, me? Like I said, I mean, you, Spencer, know me, and I probably have talked about it on this podcast. Like, I came into horror much late in life. Like, I probably didn't start watching it for reals until my late 20s, and now I'm in my late 30s. So, you know, I've had almost a decade to catch up. And it's just like, whenever I was looking at vampire movies, you know, like everyone, you know, there's like 16 adaptations of Dracula, there's the stupid underworld movies, stupid fun, stupid whatever, whatever, you know, if you like them, it's cool. I'll still be your friend. let's see. But like on the list of like the most unusual vampire movies, I feel like this is like the internet list thing. I always see like Ganja and Hess this, Ganja and Hess that. And I was like, oh, I'm going to put that on my watch list and I'm definitely going to watch it. And then never did.
Okay.
Just because, you know, and so they finally did for this podcast. Yeah. And I think I made a mistake. I think because we watched the Spike Lee one first, and I saw that before I saw the original, I think it messed up this film.
Oh, that's crazy. Weird. I didn't realize that you hadn't seen it going into that one.
Yeah.
Oh, so you must have, I don't dislike the Spike Lee one, but you must have actually, like, really dug it.
I did. I liked it a lot, and you hear me, talking about like the atmospheric stuff and the way it's shot and
it's beautiful.
The weird use of violence and of course like the Spike Lee-isms, like by the way, then this scene, lesbians. Spike, we don't need that. No, here it is.
That's my issue with that one is all the just in your face. It's just objectifying women so hardcore, and the original doesn't do that at all. So, it just kills me. But that's fair. That's crazy, though. That's what an interesting experience, the fact that you went into that first.
Yeah. And one of my chief complaints about that was the church bits. Like, because I just felt like, what are we? We're just sticking around in this church for, you know, I get the idea. I know what's going on. And then when you see this one, like, oh, okay, that's why. Because there's a lot of church bits in here. But the church bits in the original are more interesting because they feel authentic.
Yeah, it feels like a documentary.
It has like a Altman like overlap going on too.
Yeah, with the frame,
But it's like what's narration and... So it's like it's narration and like the diegetic, non-diegetic? I'm not sure what's right word.
Yeah.
But it's like this really weird mix. Like, I feel like maybe there's some kind of Altman-y touches to this. I think this is maybe around the same time as Image or Images, that one.
Images.
Yeah, so, like, I feel like maybe Bill Gunn did some Altman, was Van Altman a bit?
Mm-hmm. I can see that. Because it is, they're both, I mean, especially, I mean, Images is so dreamy, and Ganja and Hess, I hate to keep saying that, but that's, it's surreal, and it's dreamlike, and it's this, I mean, it's the way that James Hinton shot all of it and captured it, it's just, it's crazy to me, you know, the way it looks.
I have to say, this one, it is one of my favorite movies, and, like, a big reason is that it's an art film made by a queer black man in the 70s that's also a vampire movie and a horror movie and also kind of an exploitation movie. So it's this really insane mix of like all these things that I like. And it's just, and I can't really think of many other like black art films from this era. Cause like when you think like art films are like you know, like kind of like more character driven, like kind of plotless talkie movies or hangout movies. It's almost entirely like white directors, and it still kind of is like that too. And just seeing like this weird art film come from like this playwright who happens to be black is like, okay, this is it's a very black film, but also it, you know, it just shows like you can talk about black culture in America in the same format. And I would like to see more like black art films, but it kind of, you know, because of, you know, various things, it just isn't as much of a thing.
See, and I think that's the thing about Spike's version. Which maybe it's just because going into it, knowing that the beginning process for him crowdfunding that, it didn't seem like there was much of a roadmap, so it kind of just seemed like it became a Ganja and Hess remake, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't thought out, so it didn't feel very, I don't know. And I'm probably being very precious about the original just because I love it so much, but it doesn't feel like it has that, like, soulfulness to it, you know? All those layers and all those nuances.
I mean,
it's so in your face, which again, there's a lot I like about it, but it's just, it doesn't have those elements.
Yeah, I'd say the chief differences between Ganja and Hess and Sweet Blood of Jesus is Ganja and Hess has a natural feel overall to everybody, the music, the acting, the cinematography, and everything, and The Sweet Blood of Jesus feels specifically antiseptic, like very clean, and everything's on a dolly, like beautiful landscape shots. Yeah. It's a pretty marked difference.
And like another huge difference is Hess and Gontran Hess is Dwayne Jones, who is very like traditionally masculine. I talked about the Sweet Blood of Jesus episode. But he is very, you know, traditionally masculine. Like, you see him, and you're like, you know, it's like, yeah, of course he has a kid. And of course he's, you know, this, or, like, he's...
Yeah, anthropologist.
Yeah, like, he's... Like...
That was a weird revelation to me, that he has a kid.
Oh, really?
Because there's nothing like that in Sweet Blood of Jesus. And he doesn't ever talk about the kid, except for when the kid is in the movie.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, but, like...
It's like, wait, what?
Yeah. But he has, like, a paternal energy to him, where Stephen Tyrone Williams and Sweet Blood Jesus, he is just not, like, a hyper-masculine leading man. He's still good. Like, he plays it. It's a different version of Hess. He's more alien, and, like,
I mean, they could both sweep me off my feet. I don't know what you're saying. He has no hair on his body, and Dwayne Jones definitely does, I guess.
I mean, Dwayne Jones is a better-looking man than Stephen Tyrone Williams.
I wouldn't kick either of them out of bed for eating crap.
No, but I get what you're saying, though. Like, the first shot in Ganja, well, not the first shot, but, like, whenever you get just Dwayne Jones sitting in the back of the Rolls Royce, like, just, it's, there's a presence there that immediately you're like, yeah, he just looks so sophisticated and masculine. You're right.
And with Ganja, like with the Sweet Blood of Jesus, I feel like he's trying to get at, like, I forgot the actress's name, but she's British, and like having like a British black woman and a American black man, it feels like he's definitely trying to like comment on like different forms of blackness.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, but I don't think it's all that successful, because it kind of ultimately comes down to like they are kind of the same like type portrayal, same, like there's not as much change besides like she happens to be British, and there might be some like British tendencies to the Sweet Blood Jesus version that maybe, like, as an American, we won't pick up on necessarily. But it does feel like he's definitely, because like, The Sweet Blood is more about, like, culture, like, culture clash, more so than, I feel like, The Gotchman has. So, Joel, did you like this movie?
Well, what I was going to say is I really love the reveal of Ganja in Ganja and Hess. Mm-hmm. Like, the fact that immediately you know, I mean, she's just full force and you just get these little glimpses of her, you know, in the phone booth when she's calling, you just yell at him. I just love the way that shot. I think it's perfect, you know, mm-hmm. But I could say that about literally anything in this film. Like, it's probably not that interesting of a conversation because I don't have criticism for it, really.
Yeah, like I'm kind of saying about, like, I just kind of love everything about it. It's still, some parts of it are just, like, still mysterious, and I kind of like that. It's a mystery box of, like, every time I watch it, there's kind of something else that I pick up on. And try to...
Well, there's, like... Is there something else for you to focus on? Because you can run with it every which way, you know?
Because, mm-hmm. like, this time, I took note of all the art in the background. Mm-hmm. And the use of art. Because, like, some of the first images you see are... it's a museum, and it's just these various angels mm-hmm. in different poses. And I'm trying...
A lot of agonizing.
Yeah, and he has much in your back. So like the first image is an angel with a wing covering a woman, and like the woman, I didn't write down, but I think the woman in the statue looks upset, or like looks like she needs someone there. And then the second image is an angel in anguish, look like he's in pain. And then the third mm-hmm. is an angel, or it's a man, I'm not sure, because the image quality isn't so great, face down with a snake on him. Mm-hmm. And then it cuts to an angel watching. So, like, so I was trying to, like, maybe this sounds pretentious, but like, but to me that feels like maybe he's hinting at like what's going to happen.
Oh no, I noticed that this time as well. I've always loved the credits, like the actual look of the credits, mm-hmm. anyways. But, you know, I think you're right. I think everything that you see, and I don't think that sounds pretentious at all, but I think everything that Bill Gunn showed in this, I think it's very intentional, and I think listening to the commentary, mm-hmm. Which I don't, if you have not had a chance to listen to it on the Kino Blu-ray, it's amazing. It's really good.
Who's on the commentary?
It's Chez Schultz, the producer. There's Sam Wayman, the composer. There's Marlena Clark, mm-hmm. Ganja. And then James Hinton, the director of photography. Yeah, and I mean, it's incredible. It's, mm-hmm. I don't know, but from what they said, particularly James Hinton, he made it very clear that, I mean, I guess that everything that's shown, like the way they decorate the house at the beginning mm-hmm. was meticulously, you know, each item was picked by him. And there was a reason behind it, which is just crazy. Mm-hmm. I mean, it gives it that, just that lavish feel to it. So it's cool. But is he back up? Sorry.
I think Jolly's still there. Come back.
Yes, I'm casually listening into your conversation.
I didn't want to just stop talking when I didn't know if you ever actually came back in.
I can edit this part out.
Okay, sorry. but yeah, anyways, what I was saying is that, no, you're absolutely right. I think that each image shown at the beginning, I agree. I think that it is kind of showing you what is going to happen. And even the painting that whenever, at the beginning when he's going to meet Bill Gunn's character, Maida, whenever he goes through the museum, and then it fades out on that one painting of the, I mean, I think it's just a woman, you know, half dressed, and she looks in, like she's in agony, mm-hmm. and then it fades into Bill Gunn's face.
Yeah,
it kind of,
yeah, I wrote that down.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of the imagery of him standing in the bathroom, a little bit. And that might be reading too much into it, but it's, you know, the same kind of posture.
Yeah.
And sorrow.
The bathroom, like, it has, like, the one moment that takes me out of it. And it's one of the most disgusting things I've ever seen in a movie.
I know exactly what you're going to say.
Yes.
Yeah, it's disgusting.
Who does that?
I don't want to talk too much about the commentary, but there is a moment in there where, I don't know who says it, it might be Sam or James, I don't know, but they said that the biggest reaction that the movie got, mm-hmm. everyone was fine with the blood, mm-hmm. everyone was, like, there wasn't any big reaction, but whenever he dipped his toothbrush into the tub, everyone freaked out.
I mean, that's how you know it's a horror movie.
Yeah, it's like one of the most, that's like the scariest part. And he puts it back in his mouth. And it's like, you were sitting.
Hey, isn't there like a, in the movie Gummo, isn't there like a gross bathtub scene also?
Yeah, there's a lot though. Yeah.
See, there's just a thing about bathtubs. It's just.
Yeah,
you shouldn't be anything with your mouth and the water and just, it should happen. Nothing.
Yeah. But I guess we should talk about Bill Gunn a little bit. Bill Gunn, he was a playwright, screenwriter, actor. He, and I think he wrote some novels too. And you can buy some of his plays, but like the one I found was kind of a little too expensive for me. But he was this black artist who kind of got into Hollywood. He wrote. I think it was Hal Ashby's first movie, The Landlord. And I think The Landlord helped him get some cachet to make Gotcha and Hess, which he kind of made behind the studio's back. Because he kind of waited for like the right time where they wouldn't pay as much attention to what he was doing exactly. And when they saw what he made, they're like, what the fuck is this?
Well, yeah, they wanted Blackula.
Yeah, which was the year before. And mm-hmm. I feel like there are a couple nods to like blaxploitation in particular, like the whole pimp sequence. It feels like his way of saying, like, I know this is what you're expecting, and you're not going to get it.
Yeah, because they could have gone way over the top with that scene if they wanted to, and it's very quick.
Yeah, and like the pimp looks like Dolomite, like it's a ridiculous costume. It's this kind of thing, like, okay, this is him trying to, like chastising the audience of, like, yeah, you're not gonna get what you expect. This is gonna be something weird, and you're gonna like it.
That scene was also, once again, surprising to me, because that's in the remake, the only...
Mm-hmm.
sense that, you know, this person is a vampire, yes, he has to drink blood... And he can make others, but you don't know about the immortality thing or anything like this. In this scene, you get full confirmation because he gets shot a couple of times and it's nothing.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and also you can save money and not using squibs, too.
Yep. Squibs are for rich people. Yeah.
So, Joel, do you like this movie?
Oh, man, I think my computer's freezing again. I'm just kidding. I do like the movie. I'm not over the moon about it like you guys are.
That's fine. Like it's a very particular type of movie. Yeah. It's.
I wouldn't say it was bad or anything like that. I had a couple of issues, mostly with the way the dialogue was being laid out. For some reason, it just really irked me. The scene in particular that bothered me the most was after Bill Gunn's already stabbed Dwayne, and he's, you know, he just spends like 20 minutes doing whatever he's doing around the house, including spending time naked at a typewriter, and then he proceeds to read everything that he's written down, and it's, you know, it's perfect poetic you know, poetry.
Yeah.
And I have to listen. And for some reason, that just really bothered me.
Weird.
Like, come on, man. What's going on?
Considering the way he was acting the entire time, that was what bothered you.
Yeah. I know. It's weird.
No, but that's fair.
Wait, so that bothered you more than a toothbrush?
I mean, that didn't bother me in a movie sense. That bothered me in a, like, you just made my skin crawl sense. You know, the reading the thing from the typewriter felt like something I'd seen on...
Like in a play?
Yeah, like in a play.
It's interesting because he is a playwright. And like some of the, like, there are like monologues and stuff where it's like, oh yeah, he's definitely in like playwright mode here.
Right, right. And I think that explains what's going on there. But it, you know, there's some things that happen in plays that you have to do things in movies to keep a viewer from feeling distracted or something like that. But frankly, it's my problem.
Okay.
It isn't the filmmaker's problem. I'm completely aware of that.
What did you think of his performance? Because you've seen Losing Ground.
What I think of Bill Gunn's performance? I think he was being really weird, but I think that was the way his character was, like awkward, kind of. I mean, the whole like, oh, this is really great. This is really it's been such a long time. And that joke he tells, it just falls flat.
I love that so much.
I thought it was really spectacular. You know, I thought it was really.
It's so cringy.
I like the way that he acts towards the butler Archie compared to the way Ganja does later. Like, I like those interactions a lot.
Yeah.
They're really good.
Do you guys know Bill Gunn's last acting credit?
I do not.
It was on The Cosby Show.
Oh.
Mm.
Oh.
And I'm pretty sure
Did he stab Bill? Is that what happened?
If only. No. I was obsessed with The Cosby Show as a kid, and I am pretty sure I saw that episode.
Oh, well, good story.
He didn't do much acting. He did one more movie after this, Personal Problems, that was just rediscovered last year.
Mm. And I just watched that.
I really like it, but not as much. I don't know. I still don't know what to think of it exactly. Besides, I really like it.
Yeah, I think that's I don't know. I've got to sit with it, and I probably need to watch it again because I really liked the first, like part one. Mm-hmm. I liked that a lot. And then it's not that I don't like part two. It's just I feel like there's, I don't know. I need to sit with it longer. But I actually watched that on your recommendation.
Oh.
We were talking about Ganja and Hess like forever ago on Twitter, and you asked me if I had seen that, and I hadn't, so then I sought it out. Thank you for that.
Oh, you're welcome. It's his third film. His first film is quote-unquote lost, but if you can find it in certain places. Not that I have, but like going back to like Bill Gunn's career, like none of his movies ever had a proper release. Like his first movie, Stop, kind of barely played in theater. Ganja and Hess kind of barely played and got cut up and re-edited in a couple different versions. And then Personal Problems played on public access TV in New York City like 3 or 4 times.
That like really weird... like time slots though.
Yeah, and it's a 3-hour movie.
Mm-hmm.
And like, and so it's just, yeah, it's kind of within his lifetime, he never got to see a movie actually get any respect. And I'm glad we have Gunter Hess now, like, and it's available. It's kind of sad, fucked up that in his lifetime he never really saw any, he never had the career he deserved. I feel like he could have been a great art indie director, but because he's black and maybe because he's queer, that just never happened. Like, it, like,
yeah, I see, he was doing other things.
Yeah, he's
right?
doing plays and stuff, but like, he clearly had a passion for making films because he made, you know, three movies that kind of that the.
So is James Hong, but I wouldn't say he has a passion for making. No, I'm just kidding.
Don't respect the James Hong. And if you're listening to this, you can pre-order the Vineyard Blu-ray right now. I have. Do it fast. They're gonna go quick.
I'm still waiting for my Blu-ray copy of Teen Lust or whatever it's called.
He's a working man. I don't think he has time for quality.
I understand. So this movie reminded me of two other movies that we have watched for this podcast.
Okay.
Losing Ground, obviously. Bill Gunn's in that. And I feel like the dialogue in there comes off kind of like this, you know, kind of play-like. And the relationships, you know, the relationship that, like, develops between the lady, the main lady in Losing Ground, and the guy, the actor she's hanging
Dwayne
out with.
Dwayne Jones?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh, Dwayne Jones. No, wait, the other Jones? Exactly. Is he in other
Dwayne
movies?
Jones?
Yeah, never heard of him
okay.
before. Anyway, and it also reminded me of Daughters of the Dust.
Interesting, because...
Because of the dreamlike, you know, photography.
Yeah,
going
Julie
on.
Dash cites Gudrun Hess as a movie she really likes, and she references it with the tree, some tree scenes in Daughters of the Dust, when the girls are hanging out in the big tree. And I feel like Casey Lemons might do that in Eve's Bayou, because there are shots of the girls hanging out in trees.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if Casey has seen Gudrun Hess. Maybe.
Get her on the phone.
Hey, she's busy working on Harriet.
Yes, I love Losing Ground.
I have nothing to say about Losing Ground besides this.
I mean, his Bill Gunn's character in there, like... He's got that, like, artistic machismo bullshit thing going on. And, like, that's... It is the same kind of acting in here. It's not obviously not the same character, but he's...
Because it's not as manic.
But, yeah, he's just got such presence. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
He has a weird on-screen presence where it's like you're not quite sure like what he's going to do. He has a wild card factor. And I really wish he would have had a bigger career because, I don't know, like... There are a lot of, like, great character actors, but not many of color. I think he could, you know, like, work with, like, all the big names and doing interesting things. Maybe not, like, be like a James Hong who shows up in everything, but, you know, he just, you know, has to have a really... I'm always disappointed that he and Dwayne never kind of had the career that they really deserve. I think Dwayne could have been like a top tier lean man in 1970s Hollywood. Just it never happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's crazy to think of because Dwayne Jones is, I know that he kind of, not that he resented being Ben in, you know, Night of the Living Dead, but I think, you know, as he got older, he was worried about just being typecast as, like, the horror guy, and just, he leads that movie, though. That, I mean, you care about that, it, I don't know, I could go on and on about that, which I won't, but the fact that he never really took off, and I know that he was kind of caught between if he wanted to just continue being a teacher, you know, or a professor, because he taught language, or if he wanted to go, you know, into Hollywood. And I think there's also a lot of that in his, you know, him playing Hess, the wanting to find that identity. I think that that was a very personal thing for him.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, and the whole identity theme plays perfectly for Spike Lee, because, like, a common thing with, like, with most Spike Lee movies is identity. It shows up from, like, she's gonna have it all the way to Black Klansman, of like trying to like figure out who you are really. So like the sound design of this, it's like it's the sound design, like it's like for me like pitch perfect, because like it just adds, it's like another layer of like the weird dreamy quality, because like echoes are like huge, and it's like not like a Western echo where it's like expansive. It's kind of an echo where it's like it doesn't feel like earthly. It feels like there's something kind of off about just how like this, how loud and how they play and how they play in the audio. And I noticed like whenever there's I guess like the hallucination where he sees like the white guy with the mask, and like the audio, like the steps in that, it gets like extra like strange in how they made up like the sound. I don't know, like I like that. That's one of the things I'm still trying to struggle with, like what exactly like that whole thing is.
Well, I know. Well, and this is later. It's kind of jumping ahead, but for parts of that, Sam Wayman, the composer, he completely like locked himself in a room for days at a time without, you know, food, water, and he would just like make these noises and these primal like screams, like that's what he called it. And a lot of times they would use that and layer it over the music. And towards the ending scene where, I mean, everything that Hess goes through at the very end, there's a lot of that layering over all those other sounds in the music. So, I mean, and you feel that. It is really, it's otherworldly.
Yeah, and we should say, like, the hallucinations of, like, this upper-class white man who you see in the real world very, very briefly in the beginning, is always paired with seeing this, like, African, like, queen followed by, I think, children. And, like, it's like a tribal music, and then it switches over to, like, this kind of, like David Lynch-y type music. David, like, you know, I mean, say David Lynch-y. It's kind of a lazy way to say, you know, like, strange. Anyway, but like, it's just like a really cool thing of like, whenever he gets like the bloodlust or whatever, it's like he's trying to figure out, he's trying to like decide which identity to pick. But I feel like I sound stupid here. Like this, it's just all kind of this. It's very open ended, and it's very open.
No,
sorry.
I think that what you're saying though is like it's a direct thing, because there's a point where he's struggling with his identity, and you hear the chanting, and the guy in the mask from the beginning, it's like he reaches out his hand and, you know, introduces himself again in the dream, and then you have the Mirthian queen reach out her hand to him. So it's like it's that immediate connection of his identity, you know, they're both reaching out to him.
Yeah, the sweet play Jesus does it in a much more upfront way, because it's Spike and everything has to, well, Spike can be subtle, but he's also can sledgehammer things a little. But, like, with that, like, it's definitely about, like, his blackness and whether or not he can, like, whether or not he's fully part of, like, this, like, white society. In here, it's more vague. And I feel like some people will watch this movie and not be into it because it's kind of so vague, and it really forces you to grapple with it to figure out what you're seeing, which I personally like, but although, no, it's not for everyone.
How are you subtweeting me during a podcast?
Me? Oh, okay, Joel, is there anything you really want to bring up? Any like scenes or moments or,
I mean, I really, you've already talked about it, but the whole music change, mm-hmm. whenever he's getting that, like, bloodlust going on that he's not in control of, I think is done so well in a way where it's easy to feel what he's feeling. Like, it's just sort of, it's not like something snaps, it's just a change that just happens in, you know, in moments of it, whatever lust he's in, or when he gets caught up in a moment, and all of a sudden he sometimes gets bombarded with the visions and that it is really done well. Okay. That's all.
Do you have any comments on like the art in the movie, like the way the placement of art, or? Or are you still, or are you kind of overwhelmed by the everything?
Well, I mean, you're talking about like the
angel statues, and
like you said, the whole reading into, you know, the things about race, like like you said, Spike Lee, he kind of makes it a little more obvious, except for, like we said, the main, you know, Hess, mm-hmm. in that movie is already an alien, so it doesn't seem that weird that he's acting weird around the white people. In this one, I mean, the only time we get that at all is when he, like, I think it was just distracted by, like, hey, wait, where'd the sun come from? Where's the sun going? Bring the sun back. What's going on here? He doesn't ever tell Ganja he has a son.
Isn't he really fucking all the time? Fucking or killing people?
I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is he in boarding school or something like that?
I took him to boarding school. He seems to have money.
Learning French.
Yeah.
Drinking ginger ale with his friends. A little punk.
I like the scene with his son. Because, like, that feels like... I think that precedes the pimp scene. Yeah, it does.
I like it, too, but it makes him so much more human than we see him any other time.
That is true.
It's like this, like, you do feel like this is his son, and he's happy to see him and communicate with him and walk with him. But the rest of the time, he's so distant and
stiff.
And
yeah, but he. Yeah.
It's just kind of a weird moment.
That's true. I mean, but like that was kind of added. I haven't watch the extra features in a few weeks, but I really was added kind of day of, because Bill Gunn kind of had an idea of what if he had a son, what if they spoke French with each other. So it was kind of like a spur of the moment thing, which is why it kind of feels a little awkward, but it also it defies the whole black stereotype of like a dad who isn't present, because like he is present, like he is, you know, friendly and like has a relationship with his son, and they speak French, and so you have this complete juxtaposition of like all the racial stereotypes of black people in movies, and especially black fathers in movies before this, of like, you know, they're not there, or they're ignorant, or they're not, or they're uneducated. And here it's like, oh no, like this is just a wealthy, well-to-do black family, and they aren't ignorant, and they know a foreign language, and it's just this very interesting moment, just to, like, to, you know, this.
But it, I know it feels, you're saying, like, it feels, like, tacked on, kind of, but I also think it, with the acting in the scene, it feels very natural, and it, I do think it gives a warmness to Hess's, like, to the character, and I don't know, I thought it was nice to just see them just carrying on in French together and walking through the garden.
Yeah, I like the scene. I wish there were more scenes, a little bit more fleshed out, you know, scenes like that. Mm-hmm. Because really, if it wasn't for that scene, I'm not sure how much I would like Hess in general.
Do you like Hess and Did We Play Jesus?
No. I mean, he's a robot.
That is true. I think.
I mean, he's at least got the, in the beginning, he's at least got the, the sense to be like, I don't want you to kill yourself, especially on my property, you know, kind of thing that he does in this movie, too. It's like, really, really, man, everything's going to be okay, all right? It's your first day on the job. I know you got the jitters. Get out of my tree.
I find some parts to be really funny, like the tree sequence. I love that. Like, it always makes me laugh out loud every time.
I'm just kicking his feet.
Yeah. And when one boy says, I'm neurotic, he says, what does that mean? He says, that's your goddamn business. Mm-hmm. And then there's when they're having breakfast and Ganja is just being pretty ruthless towards the butler. And it, like, she's just going off and listing everything, keeps adding on to the list, and it's a very rude thing, but it's just so funny that the butler just has to seeing him sit there and take it, and just like, he has to put on like a professional face when it's clear like Hess could stop it, but he doesn't, and it's just this really interesting moment of like their class, and also just, I don't know. I'm sure there's other things going on with that scene that I'm not picking up on.
No, no. Yeah, no, but I do. That's why I love, again, the scene with, you know, Maid at the beginning and then her at the, you know, well, the middle. I just love the way that they interact with him and how different it is. And she just is relentless with him.
Yeah, and there's a whole grocery sequence.
Her hand popping out of the car.
Yeah, and like, every time I watch this, I'm like, oh, he's going to drop all his groceries. Like, oh, no, good.
Yeah. Ganja is very forgiving. You know, when she goes down to the wine cellar and sees her dead husband, she's obviously very upset at the dinner table. But after she accuses him of murdering the husband, it just, you know, everything goes back to normal.
Yeah.
And
he's good at fucking, I guess.
I don't know. I might want some sort of explanation. I mean, she knew her husband was off, so I don't think it would be that difficult. But, yeah, I mean, there's just a scene that's missing, I feel like, where we smoothed everything out.
Yeah, because it does go from that conversation to all of a sudden they're in the hallway just, like, throwing stuff and, like, playing.
Yeah, she talks about the snowball fight, and that's a really good monologue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just love, like, the very abrupt cut to them frolicking, and you get the song You Got to Know, or You Got to Learn. It's just... I marked it like an hour, 10 minutes in. Like, that's my favorite sequence of that monologue of you get to know her as a person, and then suddenly you get to see, like, oh, they really are in love. Mm-hmm. Or at least, you know, in lust with each other at this point. And there's, like, that, it's, that moment is, it's a step in the hallway, and you see them running back and forth, and you don't actually get to be a part of their frolicking, like they're keeping us out of their happiness. We're out of that moment, at least, but it's just a, you know, you don't see that in the Sweet Blood. You don't get like any moments like of them being goofy with each other, because as Trolley you said, he's basically a robot.
Yeah, you don't get any warmth.
No, but Hess does show human, he does show human qualities, but never in his private life, never at home, never work related, and almost never with Ganja herself. But when he's out, you know, stalking the town looking for victims, there's at least a couple of times where he's like, oh crap, you know, like where something goes wrong that he wasn't expecting to happen. So in this one where the baby scene happens, you know, he picks up that lady. I kind of say the, I don't know which one I prefer. Really? Like, we know what happens. Yeah. And we don't actually see the baby. We just hear it crying when he leaves. But there's something so weirdly ballsy about Spike mm-hmm. Lee's version going back, you know, and the woman having the dead baby. Like, I don't know. I really like both of those, both versions.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the Spike one, he actually, like, talks to the baby after he kills the mom. And, like, it's this extra layer of cruelty. Yeah. And where in Gudrun Hess, he's just more cold and, like, well, I have to... Well, not cold, but, like, you get the feeling of, like, he also kind of has to get out of there. Because...
Yeah, get like disgust like with himself.
Yeah, I mean the Spike one is crueler, and I think attempts to be more sexual, but Spike isn't good at sexy in movies.
What are you talking about, John Leguizamo? Bam, bam.
Yeah, and in Summer Slam, he says, "I'm coming so goddamn much." It should be a drinking game.
I don't want to remember.
I mean, like, this movie is really sexual. Like, I feel like most movies don't pull off, like, sexuality that well. I mean, some can pretty well, but for most part, it's kind of, you know, hit or miss. But, like, I don't know how it worked. Like, I guess maybe it's, like, maybe Dwayne and Marlene Clark had great chemistry together, and this really feels, like, organic.
Intimacy,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's really good at showing that their relationship has that level of intimacy that, you know, when they're making love or whatever in those scenes, like it feels like these are two people that are super into each other, not just a scene that's going on, not a base urge necessarily.
Yeah, it's a very every scene, like every intimate scene, is very erotic, but it's not like exploitative. It's not. It's there's just a sensuality to it that's it's so far removed from other films of this time and even today. It just mm-hmm. I don't think there's. I think these are probably the most beautiful sex scenes in films. Mm. For me, anyways, yeah. I just think it's gorgeous. It doesn't, in the something else that they talk about in the mm-hmm. commentary, I guess that one of the lighting coordinators was trying to go in and they wanted to brighten skin tones, like they wanted to light it to where everything was brighter. Mm-hmm. And I guess that James Hinton, the director of photography, like pulled them aside and kind of had like a come to Jesus moment. Mm-hmm. It was like, no, we're going to shoot them the way that where you can see the tonal diversity. And he's like, that's what's happening. And they went in and shot it. And it's perfect.
Yeah. It's mm-hmm. like kind of copies that a bit. Cause like, the skin tones are very different with, Ganja and Hessen, his version, and the other woman is much lighter skinned. So, like, even, as I mentioned earlier, just like the lesbian stuff and the Sweet Blood Jesus is kind of like, man, I like this movie more if Spike just didn't have to force lesbians into so many of his movies. Not that lesbian, like, not that it's bad, just like his version of bringing up is like, it's exhausting.
I don't understand what his fixation... I mean, I do understand what his fixation is.
I think it's very obvious, but...
But what I'm saying is I don't know why he feels he has to put it in his films. Like, come on, man.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like Melanie, like, how did you react when you saw the Sweet Blood Jesus and you saw, like, the main victim would be a woman? Like, were you like, oh, God, it's going to be...
That was my exact reaction. I was just like, really? Like, I wasn't surprised. And I held off on watching it. I don't know. I'm all for, which I was talking about this earlier on Twitter. Like, I'm all for remakes. I don't have a problem with them. most of the time. But with this, I think I was very aware of how much, again, I would be precious about the original, and I didn't want to criticize his just because it wasn't that. You know, that's the greatest sin that it's not the original. And, but that is, that's my biggest problem, is his, just the way he shoots the women in it. It's just, it, to me, it's just, he's, it's objectifying them, and of course there's long drawn out lesbian scenes, and it's, I don't know. It immediately, I was just like, eye roll so hard.
I mean, do you think it made a difference that Bill Gunn was queer and he kind of sexualized Dwayne Jones, Nolan Moore?
Oh, I absolutely, I bet. I mean, I think that, I mean, I, you know what, not even with that first, not between the scene between Dwayne and Marlena, but later on with the dinner guest and her, I think that one especially, how much, how he shoots him, absolutely. I think that made a big difference.
Yep.
Because I think he's even more, it's just, it's like the little gold, like, sparkles that he kind of flicked on them, and then that with the blood, the way everything just kind of twinkles and sparkles, I think that there, it just adds this whole extra layer to it that, again, it's something that's already extremely sensual, and then he literally put glitter on them.
Yeah, I feel like in lesser hands that would come off as tacky. It'd be a little too campy.
But it's it works for whatever reason. It works.
Yeah, and during that whole dinner scene with the younger guy, they're wearing red, and like the color red keeps showing up more and more. And in the Spike version, it's a lot more apparent. And this one, like, if you pay attention to the background, you'll see, like, red objects that really stick out. Like, I think for the first hour or so, I turned everything that was red, and it's, like, a red towel in the bathrooms and a red cross in a bedroom. Red, I think whenever you see women with painted nails, it's always red nails. Like, red shirts, red ties. And then when you get to the whole dinner scene, they're both wearing, like, almost entirely red.
Yeah, she's in a red dress, and he's got that long shirt on with the high collar.
Yeah. Also in that scene, because I don't get to bring up Zardoz very much, the crystal she's spinning around in her hand, it looks like the crystal that Zardoz, that's in Zardoz with, that Zed gets stuck, that gets trapped in.
Nice try.
It's a great movie. It's goofy as fuck, but it's a great movie.
Absolutely. Yep.
Oh yeah, and Zed is wearing red all the time, so yeah. I mean, it perfectly fits all, same universe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, same cinematic universe, absolutely.
The gun is good, the penis is evil.
Yep.
Oh god, in recent events I shouldn't have said that. Anyway. Oh yeah, and also the whole thing with red that shows up during, I think, the breakfast scene. Ganja asks, "So is red one of your favorite colors?" Which I never really picked up on why she said that, and I feel like that's a Bill Gunn just calling out, like, "Hey, the color red's showing up everywhere if you pay attention." If you haven't seen it, we can spoil the ending. It doesn't really matter. It's more like this how, I feel pretentious saying that. It's how you experience the movie and how, you know, how you interpret it more than, like, the actual plot. Because, like, in...
They all live happily ever after.
Yeah,
Way.
Yeah, they...
Necessarily together, but
yeah, they make their choices.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I remember. I prefer to bring up another point. I kind of like Rami Malek more as the butler than Leonard Jackson.
Oh, I see. I love Leonard.
Oh, why?
I just do. I don't know. I love his. Again, it's really that breakfast scene, his mannerisms, and I like the way that it's shot. I don't know. He and the whole grocery scene. Just it's funny. It's I don't know. It's a moment of levity that's needed. I think it's perfect. It's just peppered in there.
Like with Rami Malek, I like his performance because he's very, very catty in subtle ways. Like during when they get married, he does a very sassy clap as they're getting married, and just and I like his reactions are a little more cartoony, but I kind of like him being this like silly, vaguely ethnic butler.
I'll have to reevaluate the whole Rami Malek thing after I get over Bohemian Rhapsody stuff.
That's kind of where I'm at, I think.
Cause it,
But you get to see him die in The Sweet Blood of Jesus.
yeah, I don't, I don't want him to die. I just want him
Well,
to.
an old boy.
I just want that movie not to
Yeah.
exist.
He's in an old boy remake, and he
that's
gets killed in
different.
that too, I believe.
Don't spoil it for me.
If you don't think it's spoiled, it's shit, but we're gonna cover it.
No, come on. I'll assess it myself. Unfortunately, I've already seen the original of that.
Yeah, I love the original, but I'm not looking forward to that episode.
That
The original or remake?
the remake.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
You see what you've done here,
Do
Spencer.
you want to come on and guess on the remake? Because no one's lining up for that one.
It's I'll rewatch it.
I get Josh Brolin.
Okay.
Oh, you're gonna get Josh Brolin for it.
Yes, see what he's doing.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Yeah, or Rami Malek. He's not busy doing anything.
No.
Let's see. Get married. Oh yeah, so adding on to like the sexuality, the whole ending shot is the young man that they pick up and he's not dead, he's alive, and he gets out of the pool that they dropped his body, and he's fully naked, and you see like everything, you see dick swinging, run towards the camera, and she just smiles. And it's just like and the first time I was like, I did not expect this to be the end.
Well, it's I do like whenever they zoom down from that window and you just see like movement in the pool, at first you're like, wait, what's happening? And then he gets out and it's just yeah, the whole and then ending with her because there's like two takes where it's she's looking out at him and then she looks up and smiles directly into the camera and you're like, oh, I don't know, it's eerie. Like that's the only point where I'm like, oh, that is kind of creepy. Her reaction of how delighted she is.
Yeah, and in the remake, the ending shot reminds me of The Beyond, where the lesbian comes back, and she has like the weird, like fulgy, like cloudy eye things, and they just kind of stand side by side at the beach, and I guess that's kind of a weaker ending. It's just kind of like, at least to my interpretation, was like, oh, I feel like you just watch, I feel like Spike just watched like The Beyond or some other Fulci something. I like right before he watched, before he did that. Where this is like, no, this is like a good character thing, because she, character moment, because she's very, I won't say evil necessarily, but like, you know, she is definitely meaner, she is more selfish, and that smile at the camera at the guy coming back is definitely like, okay, we know what's probably going to happen after this. And with the Spike one, it kind of feels like him trying too hard to be artsy.
I see. I take it, which the whole movie dealing with addiction. I always take it that Ganja's addiction is to control and to power, and so her making the decision that she does, and then having that ending, it's just like, and it's what she says in that monologue that, Ganja takes care of Ganja, that she's, going to do what she wants to do, and she's in control.
Yeah, that's a good call. Yeah.
And the Spike one, I don't like the monologue as much. It's still pretty good, but it's not as good. Like, there's some slight differences, and I didn't have time to watch it again, but I just remember being like, oh, it starts out kind of the same, in the middle changes, like, it's a different story, but, like, the lesson is the same, and some of the details, but just, I like the Bill Gunn version of the monologue. But I think Bill Gunn was a better, was better with dialogue, or like, monologues. Because he's a playwright, so it kind of, like, this movie kind of, like, really plays into his strengths. Like, he knew what to do. Or, I don't feel like if he were given, like, a studio picture, it would have turned out well.
Yeah,
He could have done Dune.
I mean, if he wanted to make it, like, erotic and have, you know, some naked men in it, sure.
I mean, that's
yeah,
Dune. I mean,
that's on brand.
okay.
Sea orgies and such. Come on.
Okay, then, yeah, he should have been given Dune, not David Lynch. You know, I like the Lynch one. It's goofy.
I like the lunch
Yeah.
one.
Me
It's
too.
not his best by far, but it's kind of, you know.
Oh, no, nobody's saying it's his
I'm sh
best.
Hey,
It's
there are
just.
people who love She Hate Me. I'm sure there.
Hey, there are people that hate that movie with a passion of a thousand suns, so I don't know, I
Yeah.
like it. I'm into it. It's not necessarily a good film, but I do like it.
Okay, so I don't know. I feel like I sounded dumb here, but like it's kind of a hard
Yeah.
movie.
You really did. I'm sorry.
Okay, thanks a lot, Joel.
No, you're fine. Jeez.
No, I know. Like, I absolutely love this movie. I there's still, you know, it's still a mystery. I don't fully get everything, but you know, that's kind of why I like coming back to it over and over again. It's kind of comforting, like the tone, the music. Sam Wayman, you know, everything about this movie is just like hits me in the right spot. And I feel like if you're open to artsy movies, give it a shot. I mean, if you're listening, you probably are. But you know, if your idea of a vampire movie is more like Blackula or like the what's that fucking Bram Stoker's Dracula, I'm trying to think of it. If it's more like that vein, then I don't know if this would necessarily be for you.
I mean, they never say the word vampire, really, so it's, I don't know, it's different for sure. It's not Blackula and it's not Vampire Brooklyn.
Joel, would you recommend this?
Of course, I'd recommend. I recommend any film, basically, even the ones that I hate. Who would enjoy this movie? If that's the question, I feel like you have to be, I not the casual film watcher. I don't think they would be into it necessarily. That's not to say that somebody who is, you know, somebody who loves blockbusters shouldn't watch it. Like, maybe, expand your mind a little bit. Like, it's just, yeah, it's a non-typical horror movie. It's more of an art film. And it's definitely worth watching.
Yeah, so other movies came out in 1973, and Melanie,
Did they?
yeah.
I would say just because this is what we're covering, this isn't my favorite movie from 1973, but it's another very important black vampire movie. Scream, Blackula, Scream. I actually prefer this to the original.
That's a
I think
that's a
the lighting. Huh?
no,
Sorry.
that's a common opinion I've come across.
Yeah, and I do like the original, but the way that they film William Marshall and like the lighting is actually really it's intimidating. Like he and his presence is so I mean again I love him in the role. I love his physicality. Like Pam Grier is not a small woman. I think she's like what, 5'8", 5'9"? Like, she's tall, and he towers over her, and he has just this booming voice, and there's some cheesy stuff in it, but it's actually a really good movie, so I highly recommend it if you haven't seen it.
Yeah, that's been on my list for a while. I like the first one. I was surprised when it got to slavery in the beginning, like, oh, holy shit, this is a real movie. Joel, have you seen Blackula?
No, I haven't seen
Oh, the
either.
beginning is like Dracula is visited by an African prince. An African prince, once Dracula is stopped being involved in the slave trade. So it's like, holy shit, this is kind of heavy to start out a movie like this. And yeah, it's better than the later era exploitation horror movies. But that now you have Melanie, or do you have other ones?
Let's see. High Plains Drifter. It's a Western with Clint Eastwood. It came out that year. There's a lot. Like, if you're talking just about Westerns and horror, it's kind of, I mean, it's a bonkers year, but Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid came out
Peckinpah,
1973.
good one.
Yeah, and obviously all of the horror movies that came out, I could list them all, but I don't want to take all the movies in 1973, but it's a crazy year.
Okay. Gonna try to get through mine fast. I had to cut down my list in half, basically. There's Lisa and the Devil. It's Mario Bava. I think it was the second Bava I ever saw. It's Elk Summer and shit, what's his name? Kojak. Yeah, he's Jennifer Aniston's godfather, the Greek dude. I can't remember his name. Anyway, he plays a devil. It's Bava. It's kind of late Bava. It's not as good as his earlier stuff, but still a pretty good, interesting movie. There's Immortal Tales, the Borowczyk movie. I don't know how I feel about Immortal Tales. It's Borowczyk, so you kind of have to see it to really know how you feel about it. There's The Baby, a horror movie I dearly, dearly love. I have the Blu-ray,
Love the
and I
baby.
have.
Yeah.
No. Both of you.
It's so good.
Go to your room.
I will not. I'll put on the baby again.
No homework. Wait, the other way around.
No, Melly, you're right. The Baby is a fucking classic. I have the Arrow Blu-ray and I have the Synapse DVD. I won't get rid of either. It's so goddamn good. If you haven't seen The Baby, it's you can't be made today. It's a little too offensive, which is kind of part of the charm of it. And there is Sex and Fury, the Reiko Eka. I'm sure how you say her name, but it's a Pinky Violence movie. It's one of the better ones. It's kind of one of the inspirations behind Kill Bill. I think it's better than Kill Bill personally, but it's just a good kind of sleazy Pinky Violence movie. There's The Doll Squad, a Ted V. Meckles Grindhouse movie. It's kind of like a Charlie's Angels before Charlie's Angels, and the effects aren't great because Ted Meckles, so it's you know what to expect when you hear his name, but it's one of his good movies. And other ones kind of suck. There's Belladonna of Sadness. I told you, I have a lot. Belladonna of Sadness. I guess it's an anime. I guess you'd count it as anime or maybe hentai. I don't know.
Yeah, it's really pretty.
Was it made in Japan?
Yes.
Is it
Yeah,
animated?
it's. Yeah.
Then I think you can call it anime.
Okay. It then it's had Nakadai as the voice of the devil. So of course I'm gonna love it. And it's about a witch and and women and like empowerment and French Revolution. It's about a whole lot of stuff and animation is pretty unforgettable.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
And a Polish film called Illumination. I watched on Mubi a while ago. I don't remember much besides I really found it interesting. And yeah, Illumination, if you can find it, Polish movie, it's worth tracking down. It's a I don't remember much about it. It's just, okay, yeah, that's it. I have more, but I don't want to go on any longer.
So, the two movies that we've covered on Please Don't Send Me Into Outer Space, which is the science fiction and fantasy movie podcast I do, we've covered The Exorcist, which was a treat, because Sarah, one of the co-hosts, hadn't seen it before.
Oh, wow.
And Aaron, my other co-host, had seen it, but a long time ago. And it's just so amazing how that movie holds up, like, even now. Spencer, you don't like The Exorcist.
Yeah, it's a long-winded reason. I'm not going to get into it. What reasons? Mm-hmm.
Well, I love it, and I love it more every time I watch it. There's something so human about Father Karras and, you know, poor Reagan's mother, what they're going through. Like, it feels like real in a way that a lot of horror movies just don't even bother to try to do. And it captures this weird kind of horrifying thing. And, like, sometimes it comes off as, like, this wouldn't be scary to people who are not familiar with Christian religion or all that stuff like that. I feel like people are relatively familiar with the concept of a demon no matter what, whether it's related to Christians or just a Halloween tale. And that's the thing, like, being invaded by something, someone you love being invaded by something that you can't do anything about. And you can't figure out, and you do everything, and science, you know, can't help you, and you go as far as, like, I have to figure out some other way to do this. I'm going to go talk to, you know, a witch doctor. I'm going to go talk to a priest. I'm going to go talk to the crazy guy down the street who told me his urine can cure everything. And that's a feeling that people have and get, and I think The Exorcist shows it pretty spectacularly. The other movie is Soylent Joel, Green.
Just want to add, It's not the movie, it's me. About The Exorcist, it's me. I think the movie is technically very well made. It says personal things with me, why I kind of don't like it.
No, I see on Letterboxd you said this is shit, and anyone who likes it is shit.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a really mean review.
You know, my family, we were raised Catholic, me and my brothers, and part of the family is really into film and horror and all that stuff, and one of my brothers is very much not. And before I could watch The Exorcist, I had to read the book, just a thing my mom did. And when I was reading it, my older brother wouldn't even look at me. Like, he was so disgusted with me. And he thinks that movie, he's not even a practicing Catholic anymore, but he is, like, he hates that movie so much, and he hates everything about it, that he was just so disgusted with me. So, you know, you're not the only one.
Yeah. I know. I mean, I like other freaking movies more, like Cruising, I think is personally a better movie, but it's also a weird movie that kind of doesn't work, and is, I guess, could...
That scene in Cruising where the little girl's head turns around is crazy.
Yeah. This isn't the Cruising podcast, although I wish it was.
Welcome to the Cruising Minute-by-Minute podcast.
I love that.
Today, we're talking about, Cruising. Anyway, yeah, I like other freaking movies, too. I mean, it's not one and done for me. I just think that The Exorcist is... I don't know why it means... I'm not Catholic at all, so... Wasn't raised that way, so... But I just... anyways, moving on. Soylent Green. Covered that also. We had Jake from the Love You Like Crazy podcast as a guest on that. And I had not seen it before, and... You know, it's so famous for the Soylent Green as people... line and everything like that, that you don't know how subtle, like, this, like, mystery that he's solving in the movie, and how, like, all how big of a message the movie is, just based on the pop culture of it. And it's so good. Like, Charlton Heston is so good in it. Like, I just encourage anyone who has not watched it because they think it's going to be silly to sit your damn ass down and watch it.
Fine.
Spencer.
Yeah. Hey, when are you going to schedule me in for a Matador episode?
I don't know. What are you doing Sunday?
That's my weekend off, so nothing.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll talk to you about it. The last movie I'm going to mention, and this we haven't covered, but it is also a kind of sci-fi leaning movie, is a movie called A Cold Night's Death, directed by Gerald Friedman, starring Robert Culp and Eli Wallach. And it's basically proto-John Carpenter's The Thing. Like, I know that The Thing is based on a previous movie. I have never seen that movie. But this one, it literally takes place in an Arctic base, Antarctic, one of those kind of things. These two men end up trapped together, and they have to figure out if one of them is trying to sabotage them. There's a bunch of primates with them. Maybe there's a disease going around. There's a lot of suspicion, a lot of double-crossing. It's a really good thriller movie, and it's a TV movie. It's in full on YouTube. And I recommend it if you haven't seen it before.
All right. So, Melanie, thank you for coming on.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Hopefully I didn't sound like a big frittata.
No, you sound like a human.
You were great, thank you.
Yeah, and your dogs in the background were cute, not distracting.
Could you hear them sleeping?
A little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, luckily Freya has not acted crazy. She might act crazy, so I just mentioned that. Anyway, so do you have anything coming up or you want to plug or like, something like that?
I produce a podcast for a couple of friends. It's called Cinema Parlor. It's still pretty new. Like, I think they might have like 20 episodes, something like that. And then I have a bunch of stuff I've written that I'm sitting on, so I will be contributing to two websites, but I don't have anything out right now, so not really.
Oh, okay. Joel, besides the Alien 3 episode that dropped today, any upcoming episodes you want to mention?
Well, the only thing firm that we have coming up is we're going to be talking In the Mouth of Madness at the... everyone's favorite actor, Sam Neill. Starring Sam Neill, about Sam Neill, and by Sam Neill. Oh, I guess that's also John Carpenter. But, you know, Sam Neill.
It's the last good Carpenter. Wait, is it?
What?
Ooh.
Is that the last good one?
Well, that's
fine. A little movie called The Ward. I'm just kidding. Yeah, I don't know if I agree with that. I'll have to look it
Vampires,
up.
The James Woods but, one.
Oh, God, never mind.
Ghost of Mars.
That ruins... Not only does that ruin every movie afterwards, but every movie before that.
I think that's the last good one. I haven't seen it. That's what people say.
Mm. All right. Well, watch In the Mouth of Madness.
Is it better than Ghost of Mars?
I don't know. I haven't seen Ghost.
I don't recommend it.
I'm saving it for a special occasion.
Just the right occasion for Ghost.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. So,
Ghost of Mars anniversary.
In the next few months, I'll be in a grind band a couple times. The first one will be talking about the Disco Godfather, and the second one will be talking about Sister Street Fighter. I'm not sure when exactly, but those are in the schedule. So, yeah, in the next few months, and, what else was there? Oh, I was just on Below Freezing with Micah and CJ, and, I volunteered for Cool World. It's a terrible movie that's also one of a kind, and there's a lot to talk about, and, it's a fun episode. It's fun getting to share that experience with other people. And that's it. This month is... this is August, so next month is that World War II one, Miracle at St. Anna, with Justin Harrison, and... Wait, Joel, did we agree it was going to be the Cannes winner of 2008?
I don't. Was it up against, Chicago?
It's The Class, which was a Cannes winner, or it's Slumdog Millionaire.
I mean, if we can get the
Class. I believe it's still streaming on Amazon.
But Slumdog, I mean, I wouldn't mind talking Slumdog.
Okay. So, it'll be one of those two. It depends on
availability.
So,
maybe both. No, probably not.
I don't have that kind of time. And, yeah, that.
Yes, you do.
That's it. Thank you, Melody. And, you're welcome. And, see you guys next month for Miracle at St. Anna.
Mm-hmm. Bye. All right, stopping recording.
The show's email is highandlowpod@gmail.com. It made no sense to change email, so it's the same feed. The show can be found at podbean.com, and Spotify, and other places you can find podcasts. Please rate and review whenever possible. The logo is by Josh Hollis. The music is by James Fell. And thank you for listening.